This is Dave Kirpin, author of Likeable Social Media. Keep listening because you rule!
Welcome to the Marketing Book Podcast, helping you keep up with the smartest thinking in the quickly changing field of modern marketing. And now, here's your host, Douglas Burdett.
Hello, thanks for joining me on the Marketing Book Podcast, where each week I publish an interview with the author of a new marketing or sales book, and which has been named by Forbes and LinkedIn, amongst others, as one of the top marketing podcasts. Don't worry about taking notes. You can find links to everything linkable in this episode's website page at marketingbookpodcast.com. And since I get to read every book featured on the show, if I can recommend a specific marketing or sales book or any other resource I know of for whatever challenge you're facing, send me a LinkedIn connection invite with a message that you're a listener, and I will do my best to get you pointed in the right direction. My name again is Douglas Burdett. All right, let's get on with the show. Today we're joined by Dave Kirpin, and we're going to talk about his book, Likeable Social Media, Revised and Expanded, How to Delight Your Customers, Create an Irresistible Brand, and Be Amazing on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, Pinterest, and more. Dave Kirpin is an entrepreneur, author, and former reality television personality. He first received media attention in the Boston sports market in the late 90s and early 2000s for his unique vending sales strategies at professional sporting events. He went on to appear as a contestant on Fox's 2003 reality television series, Paradise Hotel, and earn additional media attention for his sponsored wedding in 2006. He's currently the CEO of Likeable Local, a social media software company for small businesses, as well as chairman of Likeable Media, a social media marketing firm, and in addition to the New York Times bestseller Likeable Social Media, is also the author of the books Likeable Business and Likeable Leadership. Dave is a frequent keynote speaker at venues around the world and a contributing writer for LinkedIn, Mashable, Inc., Fast Company, The Huffington Post, Forbes, and The Washington Post. His work has been featured on CNBC, ABC World News Tonight, CBS Early Show, BBC World News, and The New York Times, among others. Dave, congratulations on the revised and expanded Likeable Social Media, and welcome to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Thanks for having me, and you know, all those media outlets, and now the Marketing Book Podcast, so now I'm ready to retire.
Yes, I didn't want to say anything, but you can, yeah, if, you know, you have to work up to it, I guess. David, it's so great to have you on the show for many reasons. The most important one is that you rule.
Well, thank you. So, Douglas, do you go back to my Crunch and Munch Guy days?
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, there are one or two listeners maybe who don't know you well or don't know you but are going to know you in the next few minutes. And I was wondering if you could just walk the listener through a little bit about being the Crunch and Munch guy, a reality TV star, political candidate, and your wedding.
Yeah, well, all four might take your entire time, but you know, my first gig where I fell in love with marketing was in the Boston sports scene in the late 90s while I was in college. And I took a job working as a ballpark vendor at the Boston Garden and Fenway Park. And I ended up, my first day on the job, I had a product called Crunch and Munch, and it was the worst selling product in the building and only sold 10 boxes. Came back the second day determined to figure out how to sell more product and developed a bit of a shtick with singing and dancing and yelling at people that they rule, and ended up selling a heck of a lot more Crunch and Munch because of that, and generated a ton of media attention, and really fell in love with sales and marketing and PR, and never looked back after that.
And you would autograph the boxes?
That's right. You know, I didn't really do. I lucked into a lot of it. I didn't have any talent actually singing or dancing. But one smart thing I did, I guess, as a marketer was the day that I was first written up in the Boston Herald. Somebody asked me for their autograph. I guess they couldn't get any players, so they had me autograph their box. And the one smart thing I did that day was I asked the woman if I could borrow her Sharpie, and I proceeded to sign every box of Crunch and Munch that I sold that night unsolicited. And the amazing thing was that happened in the building was by the end of the night, I had somehow created the perception in the building that not only did you need to buy a box of Crunch and Munch, but you need to get it signed. And that led to sales skyrocketing after that. And, you know, I didn't have to sign them unsolicited after that, because people would bring their own Sharpies and have me sign their boxes. And it got pretty crazy. I had a real blast doing it.
And are these being sold on eBay now?
I swear to God, I did see one on eBay for like $17, which was pretty funny. And, you know, I have a running joke with a couple of my friends. You know, this is now almost 20 years ago, so I wonder how many people still have their autographed boxes. I have had a few occasions where people have told me that, or screenshotted or shared their pictures, and that they still have their autographed boxes at Crunch and Munch, which is pretty hysterical.
That's great. And is it true that Rick Pitino had you removed from the venue because you were distracting the players?
Yeah, you know, I was doing my thing, singing and dancing, and sometimes the players would pay more attention to me than to Pitino, and they could upset him a lot. But the good news was I actually outlasted Pitino in Boston.
Yeah.
They chased him out before me. So,
well, let's jump to your wedding. It's such an incredible story. If you could just share that with the listener.
Sure. So, you know, I got together with my now wife, and we both had a pretty strong sales and marketing background. I had actually been the number one salesperson for Radio Disney until she had started working at the company, and she had dropped me to number two. And of course, if you can't beat them, join them. So when we got engaged, we wanted to have a really big wedding. You know, for me, I've always loved thinking big and kind of being out there in a big way, right?
Yeah, that was probably already established by that point in your life.
Exactly. It actually was. It was pre-social media, but that's why social media is perfect for me. I kind of like that larger-than-life thing. So my wife had this really killer idea to create a sponsored wedding promotion, and we pitched the Brooklyn Cyclones, a minor league affiliate of the Mets, and they said yes. And so what we ended up doing was getting married at the end of the game and selling all of the promotional inventory from the game to our wedding vendors. So 1-800-Flowers sponsored our flowers, and Smirnoff sponsored our alcohol, and David's Bridal sponsored our bridesmaids' gowns, and so on and so forth. And throughout the game, we did various promotions and giveaways to thank our sponsors and to give back to our sponsors. And then at the end of the game, we got married in front of 500 friends and family and about 5,000 strangers that had attended the game. And it was just an awesome, awesome wedding. I had such a great time. I'm a huge baseball fan, so that worked out really well. But as it turned out, it was a very, very successful marketing event as well. We generated about $20 million worth of earned media, ABC World News Tonight, CBS, New York Times, CNBC, and thousands of blogs. And back in 2006, blogs were the kind of main source aspect of social media. So after the wedding, our vendor said, "This was amazing. What are you guys going to do next?" And we couldn't get married again, so we started a company instead.
And what happened? There was so much activity and response some of those sponsors came back and said, "What else can you do for us?"
Exactly. They got so much media. I mean, to date, it's the number one PR promotion that 1-800-Flowers.com has ever done. They were featured in something like 86 television stations around the globe, and they were just thrilled with their press. Smirnoff, who did our alcohol, was thrilled with the press. Entenmann's, who had sponsored our desserts, was thrilled with the press. And actually, even 9 years later, Entenmann's is still a client of my first company, of Likeable Media. So it's been a pretty amazing ride.
Yeah, and you also had other even more current case studies in the book about some of those brands. Let's move on to the book, and let me open with a quote. "Senior management, and anyone in a communications position for that matter, needs to know that marketing in a social media and Facebook world is not about broadcasting your message and getting the largest reach and frequency. It's about tapping into the conversation, listening, engaging, and empowering. The loudest, biggest spenders don't win anymore. The smartest, most flexible listeners do." So, Dave, what is being likable all about in this context?
Yeah, so it's about listening, and it's about being flexible and nimble when you do actually talk. So much of marketing and communications is listening, and yet that's the part that we almost always take for granted as we're focused on the talking part. The thing about social media is it makes the listening part so much easier and so much more insightful than it's ever been before. You know, listening has always been a part of marketing communication, but in the past, listening was done via focus groups, some surveys, some market research. Well, now the reality is that your social media is your 24/7, 365 focus groups, surveys, and market research. And your ability to tap into that listening is really only limited by the hours of the day and the staff that you can put on it. There's just such a wealth of information that you can glean from listening in social media, and then use that, of course, to inform the talking part of your communication strategy.
Mm-hmm. This book seemed like a book that is a great one to hand to a CEO or a business owner and say, look, don't be so afraid of social media. And the book has, for the listener's benefit, it has 18 strategies about using social media, building your brand, and being successful. And then at the appendix is sort of a refresher course on the nuts and bolts of the popular social channels. Let's dispel a couple of social media myths. What can social media not do that some people think it can do?
Sure. So social media is not, I guess, first and foremost, it's not going to happen overnight. There's just, social media is about building relationships and word of mouth, and that just doesn't happen overnight. It does take time. Also, it's not free. The major cost to social media done right is time. And time is money, of course, whether it's your time or a consultant's time or a staff person's time or an agency's time. It's not free. And finally, and probably most important, social media is not going to make up for a bad product or service. In fact, if you have a problem, major problem with your product or service, it's going to make it worse to amplify the volume around, you know, conversation around that product or service. So, you know, when folks come to us, we always say, you know, if the product's not there yet, work on that before you really work on your social media.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you say if your company's not prepared to embrace the good, the bad, and the ugly, then social media in general isn't right for you now.
That's right.
But I'm wondering if some companies are using that to say, oh, well, we got a few problems. And it makes me wonder if they use that as cover for, well, let's not get involved in social media. We're afraid somebody's going to say something bad about us, which I guess at that point you start talking about United Airlines and guitars.
Well, look, something people are going to talk about you, and you have a choice. You can either completely ignore it, or you can deal with it, join the conversation, embrace it, and try to amplify the positive and deal with the negative. Yeah, I mean, the United Breaks guitars example is still quite classic, right? Dave Carroll, musician, takes a cross-country flight with United. His guitar breaks. He complains. They ignore him. And he's a musician, so he writes a little song and records it on YouTube, a song called United Breaks Guitars. And, you know, 20 million views later, United Breaks Guitars has been the kind of case study for what not to do in paying attention to your customers in social media. So whether you're the size of United Airlines or a lot smaller, I don't think you really want to risk giving people the impression that you don't care about them. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. So you have to, at this point, join the conversation. And I think that certainly all big businesses are there. There's a lot of small businesses that aren't quite there yet, but they're on their way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, you say in the book there's no way for an organization to use social media successfully if the organization simply silos the work to marketing or advertising. Why is that?
Well, the thing is that when social media first, you know, started happening, it was thrown into marketing and then PR. And now the big thing is sales. But the reality is social media affects all forms of your, all departments, all aspects of your business. And, you know, social media might be owned by marketing, which is actually, I think, a great idea. but it has to be embraced by everyone, from customer success to sales to operations to PR to corporate communications. Social media now is just such an omnipresent aspect of all of our lives that, you know, if you're in business, you've got to make sure you're addressing it, whatever it is that you do. And so while marketing can own social media, it's got to be a part of really, really everything, every aspect of a business.
Yeah, it kind of brings to mind, like, do we have one telephone operator or do we have phones on everyone's desk?
That's right.
I'm sure businesses had to deal with that at some point. Now, you came from traditional media, radio sales, and you say in the book, just because targeting through traditional media is better than it used to be doesn't mean it's the best. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Well, sure. I mean, look, media targeting has gotten better and better.
Yeah.
And that's great. But the reality is there's really no targeting on the planet that's as good as Facebook. Nothing even comes close. Mm-hmm. The fact that, you know, you can target on Facebook based on any individual's actual interest, zip code, job title, websites that they visited. It's so much better. And Facebook has so much data now on so many people that whether you want to reach a super, super targeted group of, say, 10 people that are the 10 CEOs in your town who work in the finance industry and are looking for a new vendor.
Or Carrie Kirpin.
Exactly. Or, right, Carrie Kirpin, talk about targeting the book, nano targeting. Right,
one person.
Reaching one person as I target 35-year-old married employees of Likeable who right. live in Port Washington, New York, and target my wife. Or whether you're a consumer brand and you want to target, you know, 100 million people, Facebook now has both the targeting potential and the scale to reach really anyone you want and not waste. Because no matter what, when you buy traditional media, you're wasting. No matter how targeted it's gotten, there's still a lot of waste. Whereas with Facebook and LinkedIn, you can literally just target the very people that you want and need to reach.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, as it relates to social media, you say that transparency is no longer negotiable. Can you explain what you mean there?
Sure. I mean, increasingly, companies that try not to be transparent get found out anyway. The reality is that...
And governments, too.
That's right. No, it's true. And, you know, we just live in the smallest, most interconnected world that we've really ever lived in, thanks to technology and social media. And you can either embrace transparency and be loved for it, or you can hide behind, you know, try to hide and eventually get found and hated for it. And it just seems to me that transparency is a much easier way, embracing it, transparency is a much easier way, not only to market, but to live. Because, you know, you don't have to worry about what you said to whom. And
yeah.
Our sort of open book transparency around our companies and our business plans has really helped quite a bit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, one thing that you can do with social media that is, again, I think very new for a lot of companies is questions. So what are the marketing value of questions?
Well, the idea behind my talking about questions in the book is that questions give you answers. And by asking questions in social media, you're going to get that all-important engagement that people talk about much more likely than if you don't put questions out there.
Unvarnished truth, too. It's not like you're in a focus group where people are kind of trying to tell you what they think they want the respondents to an interviewer to say to hear. You actually get, I think, much more honesty.
That's right. That's right. So
brutal, you know, honesty.
There is just enormous value in asking questions and using channels like Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn to ask your audience what they want, to ask your audience what they need, to ask your audience what they like about you, what they don't like about you, what their wishes are, what their unfulfilled needs are. There's just so much when I think about marketing, product marketing, R&D that can be answered by some simple questions in social media. It's amazing. And that part is actually still, you know, even as companies, you know, I wrote the book originally 5 years ago, and mm-hmm. the new book, as you mentioned, is revised and expanded. So, you know, a lot of things have changed, but surprisingly, some things haven't changed, which was things like companies' inability to embrace, you know, you really using questions to gain insights. And I wish I saw more of that today.
Do you occasionally feel like you're taking crazy pills, to use a Zoolander reference, where you're thinking, for the rest of my life, am I going to be explaining some of these things and people are just going to resist?
Yeah, I mean, at this point, I've gotten so... I did for a while feel like that with the crazy pills. And at this point, enough people have started to get it. And I've also kind of done this for as long as I have that I'm just used to it now, and nothing really surprises me anymore. But I'll tell you what I have witnessed. And we have two companies. We have one that works with big brands, mm-hmm. and we have one that works with small businesses. I have witnessed a shift whereby today I get a lot of the same questions and kind of surprised looks from small businesses that I got from big businesses a few years ago. At this point, most marketing teams at big businesses are kind of there. They like being reminded of all the key tenets that I write and talk about, but they're kind of there. But it's the small business owners that still kind of really need help getting there. But I think they'll get there. I think within a couple years, this will be accepted as kind of common business practice. I certainly hope so.
Mm-hmm. Why do still companies give up on content and social media so quickly? I mean, not all of them do, but it seems like a lot of them just don't seem to want to stay with it.
They do. And I think it's the nature of the beast in terms of our need for immediate gratification. And we're just, especially small businesses, are just so desperately in need of ROI and, like I said, immediate gratification that, you know, they'll finally try something like social media, and then it won't work for content marketing, and then it won't work for, you know, a couple of weeks, and then it's like, this isn't working. I mean, we have, you know, we sell year-long contracts to our software, and we get calls from people like sometimes 2 weeks in. They're like, "This, I haven't got any customers yet." And it's amazing to me. And it's like, okay, I hear you. Let's breathe. This is going to take some time. You know, just like you wouldn't walk up to someone at a cocktail party and show them your watches and expect to get sales right away, you can't do that online. It's going to take some time. But it just, I think people need to get used to that paradigm. And until they do, there are going to be some that, you know, that do give up too early.
That's a shame. But it's like planting a fruit tree. It's not going to start yielding fruit right away.
That's right.
One thing I wanted to make sure the listener was familiar with or reminded of was the DND. Can you explain what the do not delete rule is?
Sure. So what we believe is that not responding to a comment on social media, and certainly deleting a comment in social media, is akin to a response in and of itself. Not responding is a response that says, you don't care about the customer. So
screw you.
I like to put it this way. Can you imagine if somebody called you up and you, like, just a customer called you up and was talking to you and you just hung up the phone on them? Of course not. Well, can you imagine if a customer called you up on the phone in the middle of a football field with thousands of people watching on the sidelines and you just hung up on them? Of course not. And yet that's what happens when you're deleting or not responding to a comment in social media. So yes, we believe in the do not delete rule. The only cause for deletion of comments would be profanity, bigotry, obscenity, or calling out the name of someone's personal information that isn't appropriate. Besides those things, don't delete. Instead, respond positively, indicating that you're going to solve the problem privately. So, we're sorry you're having an issue.
Sorry doesn't mean you're guilty, right?
Right. That's right. Sorry, despite what lawyers keep telling me, is not an admission of guilt. It's just empathy. Mm-hmm. And by the way, I'm sorry is infinitely better than our apologies, which sounds robotic and ridiculous. So say, I'm sorry you're having this experience, you feel this way, etc. And I've sent you a private message to help fix the problem. Then, of course, you fix the problem. You know, basic
very important service, fix the problem.
Exactly. You got to actually fix the problem, right? So we use the last methodology: listen, apologize, solve, and thank. And then the world will know that you're the kind of customer, you're the kind of company that cares about its customers.
Yeah.
That's really, really important, because you know it's not the individual customer that's essential, although obviously it is good to take care of each customer. It's the fact that nothing goes away on the internet. So, you know, you don't respond to something. Well, first of all, if you delete something, you're encouraging the customer to go, you know, pull United Breaks guitars and go get louder somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't respond to something, you're not telling the world that's watching that you care. And, you know, you'd be surprised. People find reviews from months or years ago, and it's not the negative review that's going to be the problem. It's the fact that nobody responded.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to look like a problem.
Yeah, and it's never the crime, it's the cover up.
That's right.
And I may be like other people, and maybe not, but if I have worked with a company or bought something from them and there was a problem and they resolved it, I become unbelievably loyal because I saw how they react in a bad situation. And
that's right.
And all these people, it doesn't seem like people are angry that something went wrong. It's did you deal with it?
That's absolutely right. And you know, the thing is, we're all humans and we all make mistakes, and therefore we all understand that behind other companies are humans that make mistakes. So it's not the fact that something goes wrong. It's the fact, it's how they respond afterwards that really makes a difference.
And how they respond sometimes turns me into an unbelievably loyal customer.
That's right.
And it probably even makes them seem more human and approachable. So
even better. That's right. I'm waiting for the company with a corporate strategy of messing up in order to solve people's problems after you mess up, and then make people love you even more.
Yeah, that's great. Right. So, Dave, if readers took only one thing away from the book, what would you hope it might be?
Well, you know, I think as a general rule of thumb, social media is not nearly as complicated as people make it out to be.
Mm-hmm.
There are lots of different tools and networks, but there are some really basic strategies, you know, that we probably all learned in kindergarten: listening, storytelling, gratitude, authenticity, transparency, that if we embrace these basic strategies, we can do very well in social media.
Mm-hmm. That's great. And what happened after kindergarten? Were all those things surgically removed from us?
Exactly.
So let me ask you a couple questions popular with the listeners. Are there any recent marketing or business books you have read that you recommend?
You know, probably my favorite business book of all time is a book called Give and Take by Adam Grant. It's a fantastic book. I read really all things Seth Godin.
Mm-hmm.
I love Dory Clark, who I know you've had on this podcast.
And mentioned you.
Oh, well, there you go. So I'm glad to mention her at the same time. I love Eric Qualman, who's written a number of social media books. So, I'm a huge reader of and fan of Jay Baer. I love his books. He's mm-hmm. got a new book coming out that I'm looking forward to. So,
yeah, which actually you talk about what his book is going to be about, apparently, because you talk about how you can actually turn a complainer into a supporter.
That's right. That's right. And So I hear Hug Your Haters is exactly that.
Yeah. So I see that one part of your book, I'm thinking, wow, there's going to be a whole book about just that one section. Are there any other books besides Jay's that you're looking forward to seeing when they come out?
Yeah, I mean, there are lots. I mean, really, so all my favorite, you know, prolific authors like Seth and Jay and Guy Kawasaki. I devour them and always look forward to to new books from my favorite authors.
What about Dave Kirpin? Don't you have another book coming out next year?
I do. I'm super, super pumped.
Come on, Dave. We gotta, you know.
Well, you know, I
know you're not bashful.
You're giving me the chance to plug it, so I will take it.
Yeah.
Sure. It's my biggest book yet. And, you know, my first book, Likeable Social Media, it was all about social media. And then my next was about business, and my third about leadership. This one is about influence of all kinds. And it's literally the art of people, 11 skills to get you everything you want in your career and in your life. And so I'm really excited about it. I basically took the kind of Dale Carnegie model, how to win friends and influence people, and updated it for today's day and age. And I'm super pumped about it. So you have a lot of marketing authors on this book, on this podcast, so you know that not everyone always adores their publisher. I've been so blessed in working with Crown Random House. They're unbelievable, awesome publisher, and I'm super excited.
Well, great. Well, tell them to tell their marketing authors about this really cool podcast you're on. Based on the topic of that book being a little broader, even broader than social media, it's probably going to be your biggest seller.
Well, thank you. I'm looking forward to it, and they're really being great about supporting it. And it's available for pre-order on Amazon now. And you know, we'll see. We'll see. Crossing my fingers and looking forward to seeing what the market thinks.
So, Dave, how can listeners best find out more about you and your book?
Well, you know, the cool thing about social media and sort of being really active on it is that it's really, really easy. And one of my core values is responsiveness, Douglas. So if listeners have any questions anytime, they can tweet me. That's probably the best way, at Dave Kirpin. And I respond to pretty much everyone that writes me, even though I get thousands of tweets every week. But
it's true.
They can also Google me and likable, and really, you know, anywhere you look for the word likable online, fortunately, you run into one of my companies or books. So
yeah.
happy to always help people get what they want and need by putting them in the right direction.
That's super. Just a final quote from the book. The contents of this book alone are likely difficult to digest and implement. So I suggest that when you first explore all the possibilities social media has to offer, you concentrate on these four key concepts. Listen, be transparent, be responsive, and be likable. The name of the book is Likeable Social Media, Revised and Expanded, How to Delight Your Customers, Create an Irresistible Brand, and Be Amazing on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, Pinterest, and more. The author is Dave Kirpin. Dave, thank you very much for being on the Marketing Book Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. And to you and to all of your audience, I say, you rule!
And that closes the book on another episode of the Marketing Book Podcast. I hope you enjoyed it and found it helpful. If you are one of the hundreds of listeners who have left an iTunes review, please let me return your kind favor by mailing you some Marketing Book Podcast bookmarks and laptop stickers. Just send me your mailing address anywhere in the world, and I'll drop it in the mail. And remember the words of the entrepreneur, author, and motivational speaker Jim Rohn, who said, "Formal education will make you a living. Self-education will make you a fortune."